The First Testament lesson is from 1 Samuel 1, verses 9 to 20. You can read along if you like in the Pew Bible. After they had eaten and drunk at Shiloh, Hannah rose and presented herself before the Lord. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost in the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. She made this vow: O Lord of hosts, if you will look at the misery of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a male child, then I will set him before you as a Nazarite until the day of his death. He shall drink neither wine nor intoxicants, and no razor shall touch his head. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying silently, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore, Eli thought she was drunk. So Eli said to her, "How long will you make a drunken spectacle of yourself? Put away your wine." But Hannah answered, "No, my lord, I am a woman deeply troubled. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation all this time." Then Eli answered, "Go in peace. The God of Israel grant a petition to you that you have made to him." And she said, "Let your servant find favor in your sight." Then a woman went to her quarters, ate and drank with her husband, and her countenance was sad no longer. They rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord. Then they went back to their house at Ramah. Elkanah knew his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. In due time, Hannah conceived and bore a son. She named him Samuel, for she said, "I have asked him of the Lord." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Our second lesson today comes from the Gospel of Luke in chapter 1, starting at verse 26. Let us hear what the Spirit has prepared for us today. In the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee called Nazareth, to a woman engaged to a man whose name was Joseph, of the house of David. The woman's name was Mary, and the angel came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by these words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord will give him the throne of his ancestor David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" The angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy. He will be called Son of God. And now your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son, and this is the sixth month for her, who is said to be barren. For nothing is impossible with God." Then Mary said, "Here I am, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." And the angel departed from her. The word of the Lord. There is a conversation that has come up in lots of different settings in my life. I've had this conversation in seminary with friends who are not church attenders. I've talked with the staff here about this problem and with colleagues over coffee. The conversation is about what the church has that no other organization does. Why church? I'm sure each of you here and listening at home had something pop in your head for why church for you. And I just want to make a quick clarification that I will use the word church because that's the concept that we understand here, but I do believe you could replace church with any other faith tradition's equivalent word, and it would be the same message about their worshiping community. So when I said, why church? What was it that popped into your head? Maybe you thought about the community, or the worship, or the mission. There are endless reasons why someone would choose to include church in their life, all good and valid reasons. But what is truly unique about the church experience? We build community around lots of things, sports teams, common interests, our favorite coffee shop. Community is not unique to the church. Worship isn't really unique either. Concerts can evoke that same worshipful energy, or a walk on the beach can be worshipful. We don't need a church to worship. Mission, we can volunteer in our own time. These are all great things that the church can do, but they're not exclusively found in a church setting. This conversation is usually had when we are trying to figure out what it is that makes us us, how we can better provide that to the community and offer and show and invite people in to join us. That if we know our product better, what we have to offer, we become better salespeople. What is it that we have that no one else has that would inspire people to choose us? What is it that we have that people need? When I take away all the things that I think we can find somewhere else, I do believe that there is a unique church product, something that cannot be found anywhere else, no podcast or social club or volunteer work, nowhere else can you find this thing. It only exists in a faith community. It is so unique and essential to what we do as a church that its absence is one of the main reasons I believe the church in the United States is in decline. I wholeheartedly believe if Christians can refocus on this unique gem, we will get the revival for which so many of us have prayed. That thing, that gem, that essential offering that we can give to the world is worth a steady reminder that we are worthy. Not because of the job we hold or the stuff we have, not based on our looks or our humor or even our kindness. Even jerks have worth. Out there, our sense of worth is based on all kinds of worldly ideas of what can make us valuable and worthy. Where you were born, your gender, how smart your phone is, where you went to school, how many followers you have, how many likes you got on your last post. Out there, your worth can plummet in a matter of seconds. But here, your worth is always the same because it is set by God. Here, we remind one another to look through God's eyes. We are God's eyes for one another. The worst week can happen out there. Your worth can be zero in the eyes of the world, but here, you are fully worthy. The two women in our scripture passages today are up against their culture's idea of a woman's worth. Both of them live in worlds that have downgraded their worth. Hannah, because she cannot get pregnant, and Mary, because she will be pregnant before marriage. Both women face the harsh reality that a woman's worth in their world is narrow and fragile. Hannah has struggled to understand her worth for years. Her culture said that her worth is dependent on her ability to have children, more importantly, male children. And her husband's other wife has given him many children. And so this heavy weight of worthlessness has set in Hannah's mind that she cannot be worthy. And it's only her culture that is telling her this because her husband does everything he can to show that she is worthy. He gives her twice as much as what he gives to the rest of his family. He can see her hurting and says, "You are worthy. I love you. Here, look how much I am willing to give you." But Hannah is still upset and struggling to see her worth. One day she's so distraught. She feels so worthless that she goes to the temple and prays to God to send her a child. She makes all sorts of promises that this child can serve the Lord. It will be raised without any drink or razors against its head. And she's hoping to catch God's attention in some way, that some way God will grant her prayer. Her self-worth has plummeted so low that she can't even bring herself to truly bring voice to what she needs. She just moves her lips. She's not even whispering. She's so afraid that someone will overhear her prayer and know her plight, know that she's barren, know that she's worthless, that she can't even whisper. All she does is move her lips. The weight of being worthless has silenced her. A faith leader hears her prayer or sees her praying, but Eli doesn't remember the gem that the faith community possesses. He doesn't go over and remind her of her worth. He does exactly what the world has done to her. He judges her and makes assumptions about her, thinking that she must be drunk to be praying in this way. And he brings her even lower. In her state, she pleads with Eli and says, "Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman." Worthlessness is not just how Hannah feels, it is how she now describes herself. It is her reality and her truth. It is all that she can see. And Eli must have immediately realized his mistake, and he says to Hannah, "Go in peace." And upon this declaration, we see a massive shift in Hannah. Her countenance is no longer sad, because that word, peace, shalom, to Hannah means more than just the absence of conflict. It is a blessing for wholeness. It is someone looking at you and remembering that you hold God's image. And if God has chosen you to bear God's image, then you must be worth something. If she is worthy of peace, worthy enough for wholeness, worthy enough just as she is finally able to see where she belongs. Thank God that Eli remembered that unique gift that faith communities offer people and snapped out of his judgment and declared her true worth. The worth given to her by God that no one can deny her. Of course, an angel, Gabriel, would do a better job than Eli. And I want you to notice the difference in the results of when you first declare worth instead of first passing judgment. When Gabriel goes to Mary, the first thing they say is, "You are favored." In their opening line, Gabriel makes sure that Mary knows she is worthy. And that sets up success for the rest of the conversation. When Gabriel then tells Mary that she's about to get pregnant, something that would have stripped her worth in the eyes of her society, her family, her friends, her fiancé, when Gabriel says this terrible thing is about to happen to you as an unwed woman, Mary goes, okay. Because she's already assured of her worth. This pregnancy is not normally good news for an unwed woman, but if God says that she is worthy, and she's willing to serve in this way. Telling people that at their basic level of existence, God has declared them worthy is the thing that faith communities do on a regular basis that cannot be found anywhere else in the world. Every week, we come here with whatever happened to us and whatever mistakes we made and are reminded that that does not change an ounce of our worthiness in God's eyes. And because we get that weekly reminder and we are set on that solid ground that Mary was set on, sure of our worthiness, we are able to share that gem with other people and let them know they are worthy and valid. It's not a coincidence that we pass the peace when we gather. It's an ancient practice of people of faith to remind each other that they deserve and are worthy of wholeness, of that peace, of shalom. Here we remember that God declares peace to us. We declare it to each other. And then we go and declare it to the world. Our failure to do this, I truly believe, is why the church is in decline. We are not doing a good job of telling people that they are worthy just as they are. We are not sharing the peace and sharing the wholeness. This feeling of worthlessness is dangerous. Our world is experiencing a pandemic that we're calling COVID, but our country is experiencing a pandemic in our mental health. For far too long, we have forced people with mental illnesses and mental injuries to posture like Hannah, where they can't even speak about what is troubling them because they are worried of being judged. There is so much stigma around just seeing a therapist or taking medicine that will rebalance your brain. We would never tell someone with diabetes that they should try harder to produce insulin, or that they just need to choose to produce insulin. But we do tell people who are depressed that they should try harder. They should choose to be happy. All those judgments and tiny comments rip at a person's worth until they get to the point where they figure, I'm already worthless. What else can I provide for this world? Feeling worthless is not just dangerous to the person who is feeling worthless, it's dangerous to all of us around them too. This week, a child who felt worthless thought that the only way to regain worth in the world's eyes would be to bring attention to himself with a gun and shoot his teachers and fellow students. When we feel like we are worthless, we grasp at anything that can give us some control back. If we control something, we have power, and if we have power, we can't be truly worthless. We will do anything to demand people realize that we have worth when we are not reminded of our worth on a regular basis. Now, I have tried every flip and stretch and bend to make sense of what happened in Oxford. And there's really no sense to be found. But I wonder if someone had declared some worth into that child's life, if someone had reminded him weekly that at his essence, he is worthy. I just wonder. So much of our world is designed to strip us of our worth. We are taught that we need to get thicker skin, to laugh in the face of bullies. There are college courses about how to become more resilient. Self-help books are a $1 billion industry. Essentially, everyone is looking to develop the response that Mary had to Gabriel's news, to be able to roll with the punches and confidently walk through life sure of their worthiness. But we miss what actually gave Mary the ability to do those things. It was her assurance that she was favored by God. She was told first, "You are worthy." No one wants to be Hannah at the beginning of the story. They want to be Hannah at the end of the story. Well, the thing that got her there was a declaration of peace, of shalom, of wholeness, of worthiness given to her by Eli. It made all the difference. This is what we need more of. We need to see our worthiness reflected back to us and for us to reflect worthiness on to others. We need to make sure that every child, every person knows that they are worthy. I truly believe our world would be a completely different place if everyone was assured on a regular basis that they have worth. I know this tragedy in Oxford has left us feeling helpless, that our sense of worth has been damaged by this nightmare in our community. And for a long time, I had no idea how I was going to talk about peace after this week. But then I realized peace is exactly what I can do in this situation. I can make sure that more people feel God's peace. I can live in a way that reminds people that they are worthy of wholeness, that they deserve shalom. That gem that is uniquely experienced in places of faith like this is what the world needs. It needs to know that in God's eyes, our worth can never be taken from us or even diminished by an ounce. Peace is what we light the candle for today. It is the word that we walk with this week. The peace that comes from seeing ourselves through God's eyes and being sure of our worth.